Welcome back, listeners. If you're hearing this, you made it through another week. Congratulations. Not everyone can say the same. Tonight's episode isn't about ghosts or demons or things that hide in the shadows. Tonight is about something far more terrifying: the human will to survive, and the unspeakable things we become when that will is tested. So turn off the lights, lock your doors, and whatever you do, don't think too hard about what you would do in their position. Because once you start down that road, there's no coming back. Let's begin. Story 1. I'm 23 years old, and I work nights at Ashgrove Care Home in Derbyshire. Worked, I should say. I handed in my notice 3 weeks ago, and I haven't been back since. I tell people it was the commute. I tell my mum it was the pay. But honestly, I just can't make myself walk through those doors again. I need to write this down. I need someone to know what happened in there. I started at Ashgrove in January, so I was still pretty new when things began feeling wrong. Night shifts, basically 11 at night until 7 in the morning. Just me and a senior carer named Deborah. This stout, no-nonsense woman from Nottingham who'd worked there 15 years and had heard every complaint going. I liked her. She kept things calm. The home had two wings. Cedar wing was newer, brighter. Elm wing was the old part. Long corridors, high ceilings, radiators that clanked and hissed like something alive inside them. Most of the residents who needed higher dependency care were in Elm. That's where the strange things started. The first time I noticed something off, it was a Tuesday, close to midnight. I was doing my rounds when I passed room 14. Mrs. Alderton, 81, moderate dementia, lovely woman who always asked me if I wanted a biscuit. I glanced in, and she was sitting bolt upright in bed, face turned toward the corner of the room, smiling at absolutely nothing. "He says you seem like a nice girl," she told me, without looking away from the corner. I felt my heart sink just a little. I mean, this kind of thing wasn't unusual. Not really. Dementia patients talk to people who aren't there. Everyone who works in care knows that. "Who's that, Mrs. Alderton?" I asked, keeping my voice light. "Jeffrey," she said. "My Jeffrey. Her husband. He died in 1987. I smiled, tucked her blanket in, and walked away quickly. Maybe I was just paranoid. I told myself that a lot in those early weeks. About a month in, Deborah pulled me aside during our 2 o'clock tea break. She looked tired. Not just work tired, but troubled, which wasn't like her at all. "Has anything seemed strange to you?" she asked. "On Elm Wing, I mean." "And the thing is, yes. Obviously, yes. But I hadn't said anything because I didn't want to seem like the nervous new girl. Over the past few weeks, I'd heard conversations coming from empty rooms. I'd seen Mr. Cassidy in room 9 pacing the corridor at 3 in the morning, whispering to someone at his shoulder, someone I couldn't see. I'd found two residents, in separate rooms, mind you, sitting awake at the exact same time, staring at the exact same wall. When I told Deborah all this, she nodded slowly, like I was confirming something. "Last week," she said, "four residents in Elm Wing woke up screaming at the same time. Same night, same hour. I checked on all of them." She paused. "They'd all had the same dream, a dark corridor, a door at the end that wouldn't stay shut." I didn't say anything. Outside the window, the car park was empty and the sky was the color of old bruises. "I looked into the history of this building," Deborah said quietly. "Before it was a care home, it was a convalescent hospital. And before that," she stopped, "there was an asylum here, love. They demolished it in 1961, built over the foundations. I should have handed my notice in right then. Looking back, I understand that now. The last night was a Wednesday. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I was doing a late check on Elm Wing, close to 3 in the morning, when I noticed the corridor was completely silent. That sounds normal. It was night. Everyone should be asleep. But care homes are never truly quiet. There's always a cough, a murmur, a television left on low. That night, there was nothing, just the hiss of the radiators. I was halfway down the corridor when every door opened at once. Not slammed, not flung, just opened. Slowly, calmly, like someone on the other side of each one had turned the handle at exactly the same moment. Every single resident was awake. They were all sitting up in their beds, all facing the same direction, toward the far end of Elm Wing, toward the old storage room that was always kept locked. And they were all speaking, not shouting, not crying, just talking in low, steady voices all at once, all saying different things, names and fragments, and half sentences. Mother, I'm frightened. Tell them to stop the noise. I remember this place. I've been here before. I felt my heart pound so hard, I thought I might be sick. I turned toward the end of the corridor, and the storage room door was open. The padlock was on the floor, closed, unbroken, as if it had simply passed through the metal of the door. Inside, I could see the original floor. Older tiles, cracked and black with age, and scratched into the plaster wall above them. Dozens, hundreds of names, patients, dates going back to the 1890s. And standing in the middle of the room, facing the wall, was a woman in a grey dress I had never seen before. I ran. I'm not ashamed to say it. I ran back to the nurse's station, grabbed my bag, and called Deborah from the car park. She was there in 20 minutes. By the time we went back in, everything was normal. Every door closed, every resident asleep. The storage room padlocked again. We never spoke about it directly after that. I think she'd seen things too, over her 15 years. I think she'd learned to look away. I moved back to my parents' house in Sheffield last week. I sleep with the light on now, which I haven't done since I was 8. Sometimes I wake up at 3 in the morning for no reason and lie there listening. To this day, I still think about the residents in those beds, all awake, all speaking at once. The ones with dementia, the ones who, we're told, have lost their grip on reality. What if they hadn't lost anything? What if they were remembering something the rest of us just couldn't see? I don't work in care anymore. I don't think I ever will again. Some places remember the people who suffered in them. And some of those people, it turns out, remember right back. Story 2. I've been working at Secure Space Storage in Bangalore for about 3 years now. It's not glamorous, but it pays the bills. Most days, I just sit at the front desk, sign people in, and occasionally help them move boxes. Pretty straightforward, you know. Last month, my manager, Mr. Sharma, called me into his office. Arjun, I need you to clean out Unit 213, he said, not meeting my eyes. The one in the basement level? He nodded. Rent hasn't been paid in 6 months. We need to clear it out. Inventory everything. The usual procedure. Something about his tone felt off, but I didn't push it. I mean, it was just another abandoned unit, right? The basement level always creeped me out a bit. The fluorescent lights buzzed constantly, and there was this weird echo that made every footstep sound like someone was following you. Unit 213 was at the very end of the corridor, naturally. I unlocked the heavy metal door and pulled it up with a groan. The smell hit me first. Stale air, like the unit, had been sealed for years instead of months. I flipped on my flashlight, expecting the usual chaos of forgotten belongings. But Unit 213 was empty, completely empty, except for two things sitting in the exact center of the concrete floor: a simple wooden chair facing the door, and a video camera on a tripod pointing at the chair. The red recording light was still blinking. "That's weird," I muttered, my voice echoing in the empty space. Looking back, I should have just grabbed the stuff and left. But curiosity got the better of me. The camera was an older model, the kind that records onto SD cards. I checked the battery, somehow still at 40%. I didn't want to seem paranoid, but my hands were shaking slightly as I ejected the card and pulled out my phone to check the footage. The file directory showed hundreds of video files, dated back over 6 months. Each one was exactly 8 hours long, time-stamped from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. I opened the most recent file from last night. For the first few hours, it was just what you'd expect. An empty chair in an empty room, the timestamp ticking forward in the corner. I fast-forwarded, watching the numbers blur. 11:47 p.m., 12:15 a.m., 1:08 a.m., nothing. Just the chair and the bare concrete walls. Then at 3:33 a.m., someone was sitting in the chair. I felt my heart drop. I hadn't seen them appear. One frame, the chair was empty. The next frame, someone was there, perfectly still, staring directly at the camera. I couldn't make out their face clearly. The image was grainy, but their posture was wrong somehow. Too rigid, too still. They sat there for exactly 3 minutes, not moving, not blinking as far as I could tell. At 3:36 a.m., the chair was empty again. Maybe I was just paranoid, but I checked another file. Same thing. 3:33 a.m., someone in the chair. 3 minutes? Gone. I went back weeks, every single night, same time, same 3 minutes. "This is insane," I whispered. I called Mr. Sharma. "Sir, did you know there was a camera in Unit 213? A long pause. "Just clear it out, Arjun, today." "But there's footage of..." He hung up. I should have left right then. Instead, I checked the previous night's footage one more time. And that's when I noticed something I'd missed. In the reflection on the camera lens, barely visible, I could see the unit door. It was closed, locked from the inside. Whoever was sitting in that chair every night was locking themselves in. I heard a sound behind me, a soft scraping like wood dragging across concrete. I spun around. The chair had moved. I know it had. It was facing a different direction now, angled slightly toward me instead of the door. My phone buzzed, a message from an unknown number. 3:33. I looked at the time. 3:31 p.m. No, no, no. I backed toward the door, my legs feeling like lead. The temperature in the unit had dropped. I could see my breath. The camera's red light blinked faster. 3:32 p.m. I grabbed the chair and the tripod, my hands fumbling. I didn't care about protocol anymore. I just wanted out. The camera slipped, and as I caught it, the viewfinder flipped on, showing me the live feed. In the small screen, I saw myself, panicked, gathering the equipment. And behind me, in the corner of the unit that I knew was empty, the viewfinder showed a figure standing perfectly still, watching me. I didn't look back. I ran. I left everything in the corridor and took the stairs two at a time. When I reached the ground floor, I went straight to Mr. Sharma's office and quit on the spot. He just nodded, like he'd been expecting it. "You're the fifth person I've sent down there," he said quietly. "You lasted the longest." I moved back to Mumbai 2 weeks later, got a job at a call center. Better pay, actually. But to this day, I still can't look at empty chairs the same way. And I never, ever check the time at 3:33, morning or afternoon. Sometimes, late at night, I wonder who's sitting in that chair right now, staring at a camera in an empty unit. And worse, I wonder if they're still watching the footage, if they know who I am. Just last week, I found a wooden chair in the hallway, outside my apartment. It was facing my door. I moved it to the building's storage room. But honestly, I'm thinking about moving again. Story 3. I'm Sarah, 28, and I work as a graphic designer in Manchester. Not the most exciting life, I know, but it pays the bills. This happened about 3 months ago, and honestly, I still can't park in multi-story car parks anymore. I mean, I physically can't do it. It was a Tuesday evening, around 7:30. I'd been working late on a project deadline. You know how it is. The kind where your boss needs it first thing tomorrow, even though they've had weeks to mention it. The Arndale car park was nearly empty when I finally left. Just a handful of cars scattered across the levels. I'd parked on level 3 that morning, right near the lifts. I remember specifically because I thought how lucky I was to get such a good spot. The thing is, when I got back to the lift, I was exhausted. My eyes were burning from staring at screens all day, and I just wanted to get home, have a bath, and forget about gradient meshes for a few hours. I pressed the call button and waited, scrolling through my phone. The lift arrived with a soft ding. I stepped inside without looking up, pressed 3, and leaned against the wall. That's when I noticed something odd. The button panel looked different. I couldn't quite put my finger on it at first. The numbers were there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all lit up in that sickly yellow light that car park lifts always have. But below them, there was another button, level 0. I frowned. I'd used this car park for 2 years. I'd never seen a level 0 button before. Maybe I was just tired. Obviously, I was tired. I'd been staring at a screen for 11 hours straight. The lift lurched downward. My stomach dropped. I looked at the display above the doors. The number 3 glowed for a second, then flickered. The lift kept descending. 2, 1, and then impossibly, 0. "No, no, no," I muttered, jabbing at the button for level 3 again. Nothing happened. The lift continued its descent, smooth and steady, like this was perfectly normal. The doors opened. The air that rushed in was wrong. Cold. But not just cold. Stale. Like it had been sitting undisturbed for years. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead, most of them flickering or dead entirely, casting the space in a dim, uneven glow. I could see rows of cars stretching out into the darkness, their windscreens coated in thick layers of dust. I should have pressed the button to close the doors right then. Looking back, I realized that was my chance. But I was confused, you know? Part of me thought maybe I'd just pressed the wrong button. Maybe there was a basement level I didn't know about. I stepped out. The doors slid shut behind me with a soft hiss. I spun around, but the lift was already gone, ascending back up with a mechanical whir. "Shit," I whispered. The silence was absolute. No hum of traffic from outside, no footsteps echoing from other levels. Just that constant, maddening buzz of the dying lights. I pulled out my phone. No signal. Of course there wasn't. I started walking toward the lift again, thinking I'd just call it back down. That's when I saw the cars properly. They weren't just dusty. They were old, like properly old. A Rover from the 80s, a Ford Cortina. Models I hadn't seen on the road in decades. Their tires were flat, paint faded and peeling. Some had spider-webbed cracks across their windscreens. How long had these been down here? I felt my heart start to pound harder. This didn't make sense. None of this made any sense. Then I heard it. Footsteps, slow, deliberate, echoing from somewhere deeper in the car park. I froze. Hello? My voice came out smaller than I'd intended. Is someone there? The footsteps stopped. I waited, barely breathing. Maybe it was a security guard. Maybe there was a perfectly reasonable explanation for all of this. Maybe I was just paranoid because it was dark and I was alone and... A figure stepped out from behind one of the cars at the far end of the level. Even from a distance, I could tell something was wrong with the way they stood. Too still, too straight. Their head tilted at an angle that made my skin crawl. I didn't want to seem rude. I whispered to myself, trying to rationalize it. But every instinct in my body was screaming at me to run. The figure started walking toward me. Not fast. Just walking. Steady, measured steps that echoed through the empty space. As they moved under one of the flickering lights, I caught a glimpse of their face. Their eyes were too wide. I mean, wider than eyes should be able to open, and they weren't blinking. I ran. My footsteps slapped against the concrete as I sprinted back toward the lift, fumbling for the call button. I pressed it frantically, over and over, glancing back over my shoulder. The figure was still walking. Not running, just walking. But somehow, they were covering ground faster than they should have been. Come on, come on, come on, I begged, hammering on the button. The lift dinged. The doors opened. I threw myself inside and punched every button on the panel except zero. The doors started to close too slowly, way too slowly. Through the narrowing gap, I could see the figure getting closer. They were 20 feet away, then 10. The doors closed with a solid thunk. The lift rose. I collapsed against the wall, gasping for air, my whole body shaking. I watched the display climb. 1, 2, 3. And finally, the doors opened onto level 3. My car was there, right where I'd left it. Normal fluorescent lights, normal concrete walls, normal everything. I got in my car, locked the doors, and drove out of there so fast I probably left tire marks. I called the car park the next day to ask about level 0. The woman on the phone went quiet for a moment, then told me there was no level 0. The car park only had 5 levels. When I insisted, told her what happened, she got uncomfortable and said maybe I should contact the police if I thought something was wrong. I didn't. What would I even say? To this day, I still can't explain what I saw down there. I park on the street now, even though it's expensive and inconvenient. I'll never forget that figure's face, those eyes that wouldn't blink. And sometimes, late at night, I wonder, what if I hadn't made it into that lift in time? What if the doors had opened just a second later? What happens to people who don't make it back from level 0?